Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. We are live at the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C., and I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a business with a food and beverage lens. On this episode, we're going to have a frank discussion about, I'm going to call it, the darkness and light that surrounds starting a small business, ranging from power dynamics to building a network of empowerment and mentorship. And at the time of this recording, the prominent technology, film, music festival South by Southwest wrapped up not too long ago. And I was particularly intrigued by a hosted conversation titled Entrepreneurship in Challenging Places. Why? Why would that intrigue me? I hope if you're a longtime listener, you don't have to ask that question. But if you're just tuning in, it's because I often feel that the solutions that are co-created abroad for entrepreneurs in developing nations are typically applicable to neighborhoods in our own backyards here in the States. So let's listen to a little snippet of conversation from the moderator and panelist, Shahed, as he shares his experience working with entrepreneurs abroad.
As I found people who were willing to take much bigger risks than I would. I met people that were every bit as smarter than I was, and innovative, and particularly driven by their circumstances to be innovative. And that I saw obstacles that they faced that I didn't face that were not just a result of their particular situation, but because of the global situation. And then I turned back as well to my own role within that government setting, and that our interaction with entrepreneurs overseas, even though there are a lot of well-meaning people within that system, was still meant to, it still looked down on entrepreneurs in these environments. It treated interaction with them almost like charity. And the metrics that drove it were not the same metrics that you need to drive success on their terms. It was based on things like national security and, you know, getting that photo op. What really hit me is that when you talk to people who are able to muster enough courage to create a company, and you come to them and you offer them help, you're playing with hope. And it's a very dangerous thing to play with, because if you don't follow through, and if they don't see success on their terms, then that relationship will break down. You don't solve any problems. As a matter of fact, I think you make them worse. And so that put me on a particular journey. How can I work with these people at more of a peer level? How can I take a step back and fill in the gaps that I'm asked to fill, not just assume that I know what the answer is? And how can I see these people not just succeed in the kind of traditional sense of, well, you know, we'll treat them as a low-cost labor pool or a market for goods, but as equal partners in that value chain.
This is amazing insight from Shahed, and I just really want to call out right now this dominance mentality that was referenced. How often do we see this happen? Again, even in our own backyards. I know what's best, this top-down approach, as opposed to what are the solutions we can co-create together? And I've always been a fan of getting deep into a solution, that ecosystem level change, as opposed to widespread dominance, market dominance of a of whatever you're proposing is your solution. And I wanted to explore that today. What happens when you can really change behavior on a systems level, and upend those traditional power dynamics through empowerment and mentorship? This entrepreneurship in challenging places discussion goes on to feature one of my favorite individuals on the planet, Kalsum Lakhani. And Kalsum is the founder and CEO of Invest to Innovate, which aims to support and unleash the potential of young entrepreneurs in growth markets like Pakistan. She's also a partner at Eye to Eye Ventures, Invest to Innovate's early stage investment fund for Pakistan and the country's first female-led fund. And you're in luck, listener, because Kalsum is our guest today. But before we take a quick break and bring her on air, I just want to set the stage as to how much Kalsum means to me. And she has no clue that I was going to do this, by the way. So hopefully I don't get teary-eyed. But look, I think we often feel that mentors have to be elders. But in my experience, my mentors have always been my peers. And I can just not express enough how much Kalsum has been pivotal in my growth as a person, really over the past 7 years. So setting the stage, when we first met in 2012, wild, I had just gone through a terrible breakup. And I heard about this global entrepreneurship group called Sandbox. I was on their listserv and decided in my sadness that what the hell, I was going to show up to one of their events at Union Market because I love food and I couldn't feel worse than I did at that moment. So I showed up and there were about 5 to 6 people and Kalsum was one of them. And let me tell you, I immediately felt welcomed and loved by the group, but even more so by Kalsum. And from that moment, my life really fundamentally changed by becoming a part of this community, because I was surrounded finally by like-minded entrepreneurial individuals who really sparked courage within me to start Curate. And I also inadvertently found my current partner through this community as well. So since that moment, Kalsum and I have been a part of a peer mentorship circle of female founders, and we've been meeting monthly for, gosh, probably the last 3 years now, I believe. And without this circle of support, I do not know where I'd be, honestly. They've been such a source of wisdom and love in my life, and I really couldn't be more grateful. So my ode to you, Kalsum, for being such a catalyst of change in so many ways for people's lives that you don't even know about. So we will take a quick break and be right back with Kalsum.
To your markets, and when I first started Eye to Eye,
listening to The Tidbit, and I'm your host, Kim Bryden. We are live with Kalsum Lakhani, founder and CEO of Invest to Innovate, also known as Eye to Eye, and she's also a partner at Eye to Eye Ventures, Invest to Innovate's early stage investment fund for Pakistan, the country's first female-led fund. Hello, Kalsum.
Hi, and thanks for that amazing intro before.
Oh my goodness, of course.
I was having a hard time not getting teary too. I'm like,
Oh my goodness, I'm sweating bullets, I'm crying. We're here for it.
Awesome.
So Kalsum, you founded Eye to Eye 7 years ago in Pakistan, where there was very little infrastructure and support for entrepreneurs. And again, at the time of this recording, you're on your 7th accelerator cohort. And as I mentioned, you're launching the first woman-led venture fund in the country. So tell us more about this journey, starting with, again, very little infrastructure and support, and why your business has grown to incorporate these three pillars of incubate, invest, and insights.
Mm-hmm. First, thanks, Kim, for having me here.
Yeah.
I founded the company. It's been now almost, 7.5 years at this point. We just graduated our 7th cohort, actually.
Amazing.
And so, when I started, I don't want to say that we had no infrastructure, because there were players that were operating on the ground. And I think for me, it's been such an ecosystem effort. It hasn't really been one player that's done everything, but before I started Eye to Eye, I was working in venture philanthropy, and I would go to these conferences in the social impact space and the impact investment space. And sometimes they just felt so self-aggrandizing to me, so self-congratulatory, of people just being like, "We're so amazing. We do all these great things in these foreign countries." And I was like, "Well, why isn't anyone working in places that no one's talking about yet? Like, why isn't anyone working in places like Nigeria or Palestine or Pakistan, which is where I'm from?" And because when I would go to those countries, specifically when I'd go home to Pakistan, I would be meeting all these amazing people that had these great ideas to affect change. And these countries have a huge youth bulge, right? Like, majority of the country is under 30. And when you have so many problems and you put those two issues together, like, oftentimes that means that when you have high unemployment rates, you actually meet a lot of young people that are just starting things, right? And it's just kind of part of who they are. It's like part of their mentality, part of their DNA. And I just thought it was just so unjust that we weren't focusing our energy on places that also needed it, and instead we're constantly just going to the same places. And so that's really what started me on the journey with Invest to Innovate, and deciding, really focusing on frontier markets and places. What we believe is that the next great innovators are coming out of places like this, right?
Amazing.
But they exist with places that have a lack of infrastructure. At the time when we started Eye to Eye, there were a few players in the market, but really not anything that was that formalized at the time. We were the country's first startup accelerator program back in 2012. But since then, there's been this huge proliferation and growth in the startup ecosystem, not just in Pakistan, but we've seen it everywhere throughout the world. And so that's really was the journey, was we started out working with entrepreneurs, as you work with, and I always liken our journey to, there's a hole with water coming out. You put your hand on one hole and there's like three other holes that open up with like water leakages. And you're like, "Oh God, we got to like address all these other problems at the same time." It's not just, if you just did an incubator and an accelerator in a vacuum in a place where there was no investors, where are all these entrepreneurs going to get funding from, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you don't have mentors there, like, how do you foster that? And so, and even at the time when I was starting Eye to Eye, I remember like having all these amazing entrepreneurs that I was meeting. And then at the same time, I was meeting people that were successful entrepreneurs that were saying, like, "We're all these young entrepreneurs, we want to mentor them, we just don't know where they are." So realizing the role that, I think naturally, I mean, you've known me for a really long time, I'm kind of that connector bridge as a personality, but then realizing how that skill set could come to fruition within the company itself. But then as we started working with entrepreneurs, we started then working with local angel investors in the country who were successful entrepreneurs themselves, because we realized, what's the point of graduating entrepreneurs if there was nowhere to go?
Right. That next barrier to entry for growth.
The next barrier to entry. And then as we were doing all of that and starting to realize that, the major issue with Pakistan isn't that there isn't potential. It's just that people have a high risk perception of countries like this, right? Mm-hmm. So we realized that Insight, which is our vertical for research, plays a very important role in helping to mitigate that and helping to, and how important information is. And information is power, right?
Absolutely.
And so even beyond creating information for outside players looking at the market, we started to create tools like the Startup Toolkit, which is like a 101 guide for any founder. I was so tired of seeing amazing founders die, their companies die, because they just weren't getting access to information about what dilution meant, or if they gave up this much percentage of their company, which started to happen in the investor space, what did that mean for the future for them? Mm. And it meant that they were kind of wiped out, right? And I just thought, again, it kind of comes from this place of injustice. And it always reminds me that when I was little, my cousin used to call me Lisa Simpson, because I was always like, just like all about this cause. And every time anything unjust happens, I'm just like, "I will fix this." And so that's really how those three verticals happened. And then as we were working with, the investor space in Pakistan still is pretty nascent. It's really new. It's unsophisticated. It's pretty predatory, which is something I know you wanted to talk about later. But, you know, as I was seeing these great startups, just like, you know, all this equity be taken from their companies and all of that, again, this whole like Lisa Simpson and me came out and I was like, this is not okay.
This is not right.
This is not right. And so that's how our fund, the process of building our fund really came about. And my partner, Mispa, who's based in Karachi, our investment manager, Asid, but really Mispa and I, in launching this together as two women, what that also means, right? In terms of not the tokenism of being a female-led fund, but how important it is to bring diverse voices to decision-making in a place where, in globally, where 2% of venture capital goes towards female founders, but also how important that is in a landscape like Pakistan and how we could try to change that power dynamic a little bit more.
Totally. Let's get into that because, okay, you're launching this fund and like you just said, you work and prepare businesses through your accelerator program, but are they ready to receive capital from an outside source? I mean, in my experience, many entrepreneurs are actually quite uncomfortable receiving money because they don't want strings attached. Again, this power dynamic, they don't want to be indebted to another person. And I'm also speaking from personal fear and experience here, but I imagine some of these feelings might be compounded working abroad in challenging places. So how do you work through these fears, especially as you're considering, again, all of this ecosystem building you've been doing?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it totally exists here as well for people that are listening that are small businesses in the U.S. The idea of not wanting to give up, you know, parts of your company. When you exist in environments that are extremely challenging, but more than anything, where the infrastructure and the systems that are in place actually create such a lack of trust, right? There's nothing that protects your, I mean, there are intellectual property laws, but they're very difficult. They're not heavily enforced and they're very difficult to take to court if someone does steal your idea.
In Pakistan
and in a lot of these countries, right?
Sure.
This exists across the world. And then also like for investors, like there's nothing that stops an entrepreneur within the legal system from running away with their money, right? So when you have all these like levers that are in place that don't actually promote trust, oftentimes you'll meet entrepreneurs that will meet you and don't even want to tell you what their idea is, right? Or they don't want to share that with other people because the environment that we live in exists it makes it so you can't, it's really difficult to be successful, which is already hard to do as an entrepreneur anyway. So for us, I mean, so much of what we do in our program is, yes, I think, and this is what's really important, is that a lot of times people want to start an incubator or an accelerator and they think it's all about technical skills, right? They're like, oh, we're just going to give,
sure,
this is how you do build a marketing plan. This is what you do. And for me, it is about that to a certain degree, but actually the bigger, more important piece of it is how do you build community, right? In a place where generally it's so hard to be an entrepreneur anywhere in the world. It's such a lonely journey, as we've talked about before and to each other. But then in an environment where that trust does not exist, how do we spark that? How do we create that with each other? How do we lower those barriers so that we can create community amongst our founders. And so many things that we do, right? We take our founders in Pakistan, our very first weekend of our program, it's 6 weekends over 4 months every year. And we take them the very first weekend, we take them up to the mountains in Pakistan and our entire weekend is dedicated to vulnerability, storytelling, community building.
Oh, wow.
It's all them just getting to know each other, right? And like what I love is watching how close they all become to each other in an environment that doesn't breed trust, right? Like
right.
These guys are all like, they all become each other's like advocates and friends. But then beyond that with our mentors, right? A lot of our investors, we actually ask them to be judges in our process for the selection of our entrepreneurs. We ask them to be mentors. So we actually start creating a relationship between potential investors and entrepreneurs way before they meet them on the demo day.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think that is important. And I think to your very first question, like, are entrepreneurs ready for investment when they come out? I actually don't think a lot of them are still, right? Mm. Like a lot of our, one of the best terms a mentor of mine has said to me recently was a lot of companies are investment worthy, but not deal ready, which means that they are worthy of investment, but there's still a lot of work that's needed on them before they're actually ready to accept investment, to absorb investment into their company. And I think that's also like been a really important realization for me, is how do we continuously improve our program so that those companies that do want to raise investment, and some of our companies graduate and then the year after that, they're actually ready for it. But how do we continue that relationship so that we're continuously providing that support to help them get there? And I think that's important, is not everybody wants investment, first of all, and that should not be a metric of success. And second of all, like, even if you're not ready, how do programs that are supposed to support you, how do they continue to support you to get there?
Absolutely. And I cannot emphasize enough this idea of, if you've gone through your whole life, if your whole experience has been that your institutions are not set up to serve you, if they've failed you in the past, then how can you, it's triggering, right? Mm-hmm. If you feel like the spaces that were supposed to support you didn't, and that could mean from your family to the government to what have you, it's as big of a barrier than finding your next customer, right?
Totally.
And I think it's wildly important for us to recognize that because of these different systems that have been created, again, here in the States or abroad, we've been propagating what types of people tend to succeed, mm-hmm. because they've had maybe more comfort and trust in the system based on how they were raised or what they were born into.
Sure.
So thank you for sharing that foundational knowledge, Kalsum. We are going to take another quick break and then be right back. We're back with Kalsum Lakhani, CEO of Invest to Innovate and a partner at Eye to Eye Ventures, Invest to Innovate's early stage investment fund and the country's first female-led fund. Welcome back.
I feel like that's your favorite part.
I love all of it. I feel just empowered being in your presence. So at the top of the show, we mentioned you recently spoke at South by Southwest on entrepreneurship in challenging places. And a lot of our listeners are designing businesses with social impact in mind. I mean, we're in DC after all. So, and as I mentioned, I'm always conscious about co-creating solutions as opposed to acting in a savior mentality. So in your experience, what are the ways we can truly act from a place of empowerment and co-creation? Mm-hmm. And what tips do you have for our small business owners who want to work in or work with entrepreneurs from other countries?
Yeah. And even beyond other countries, thinking about it from other low-income communities as well, right? And I know our good friend Jess Remington is working on an amazing book on co-creation and innovation and how to kind of build from a place of that.
Shout out to Jess and an earlier episode of The Tidbit. So Scroll back in your iTunes, people, and tune in.
And stay tuned for her book, guys.
Yeah.
Coming out soon. I think that, you know, what's really important is that as people are designing whatever they're going to be doing with their business, and whatever product that they're building, right? And thinking about it, like, I think about so many brands that I use right now that have really kind of taken that to heart. So thinking about companies like Everlane that really believes in radical transparency in their supply chain, so many companies that kind of believe in, like, when they are sourcing from artisans, even in other countries, or from, like, you know, at, like, from farmers or something,
totally,
that they're actually talking to people in those communities. And it's not from exactly. Savior complex is like such an important term, because it's coming from a good place, right? Like, we're not trying to say that, like, savior complex is necessarily a bad intention, but oftentimes that means that it's the power dynamic is top down,
yes,
versus the whole point of co-creative, in, you know, co- like being I forgot what the word you use, co-collaborative innovation, I guess. Like when we're collaborating on this, ultimately that's a flat structure, right? We believe that we're in the same level as the people that we're supposedly trying to empower. And I think what's really important is that the very first thing that you have to do is to kind of take a step back and own maybe the mistakes that you've made before and actually say it's okay, like to not have shame related to if maybe you did experience that power dynamic or were privy to it or were a part of it before. Based on the systems that we all live in, that's okay, right? Like we've all kind of been part of something that maybe isn't as savory as we like to think it is. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we can't change, right? And I think the biggest part of that is listening. I think listening and empathy are two very strong components of it. And actually saying like, I'm not here to save you, I'm here to work with you. Right. And really listen to what the needs are of the communities that you're working with and really thinking about maybe looking at other models, right? Of things that you've seen work elsewhere, and making sure that, you know, if you are someone that is on the side of actually producing the product that's in the market and you're not on the supply side, like what are you doing to tell the stories of the people that are part of that supply chain and do it in a way that's really, it reinforces dignity and make sure that the power that you are promoting is something that's a lot more flat rather than top down.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. And this really resonates again with, I think, a lot of our listeners who are looking to source their products. Again, it could be tea or spices or raw goods from communities abroad who may also be entrepreneurs in their own right. But how do we have that transparency mm-hmm. between all of the stakeholders as a part of your business process? Kalsoom, you have been one of my most valued peer mentors, and like I tried to at the top of the show, but I can't even really begin to explain my gratitude for our friendship and your mentorship. And like I said, with great fortune, we've been a part of this circle of peer mentors together where we discuss our businesses and our own personal growth. And oftentimes, again, I think people think of mentors as just an elder, but that's not actually my experience. So can you talk more about your experience with mentorship and any advice on how to develop and cultivate communities of support?
Yeah. And I agree with that. I actually do have amazing mentors who are older than me. And I always think that it's never necessarily one model that works. I think as I've built this company, I definitely look to people that know more than I do. But I think what's amazing, and just like you said, we're part of this amazing peer community. And I think just to shout out to one of the co-founders of Sandbox, Fabian, who actually said, the vision behind Sandbox is like, what if tomorrow's leaders met each other in their 20s? And not in their 40s, right? Like what could they create together as a result of that? And I think that's such a powerful statement. And I think for me personally, I constantly am seeking people who are peers and friends and actually saying like, I want to, beyond like saying that, you know, I'm mentoring you, it's more like, how are we lifting each other up? Because as you know, this journey of what we all do is so lonely. And it's not like, I think oftentimes when people look outside in, they think it's so glamorous. Oh my gosh, Kalsoom, you're so busy, quote unquote. And I'm not actually, like, I'm like alone in my room, like working on this thing. I would love to talk to people.
But I know, we're both very extroverted humans.
It's super extroverted. I recently took the Myers-Briggs and thought I was maybe less extroverted. Nope, still 92% extroverted. But I think what's important is that, you know, we know for ourselves, like, what is it that sparks joy in us from other people, right? For me, I know personally, the peers that I've been able, including Kim, be able to surround myself with are people who are vulnerable as leaders, who are authentic, who will always say what they don't know, but then will always be very open and generous in what they're sharing with you. That's really what Sandbox brought to me. But then as I've gotten older and technically aged out of Sandbox, and have continued to like just find amazing humans that have just have been part of my community. And those people don't even live in the same city as me. But like, I mean, shout out to my crew of people who are around the world right now that we're on WhatsApp together all the time and talking and on monthly calls. And I think for me, what I look for is that constant like people who see me and vice versa, right? And it's like finding people that see you for you is not always the easiest thing in the work that we do, but when you meet them, you kind of know.
Yeah, definitely. And just to emphasize this point even further, sometimes we try to force a a circle of peer mentors or just mentorship circles. Mm-hmm. And perhaps you could have feelings of people wanting to one-up each other, or in a, it could go into more of a networking mm-hmm. as opposed to really, a, again, a mentorship sphere. And I love what you said about finding people who really see you. Because at the end of the day, we just want to be seen and heard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that has nothing to do with business at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a crucial element in when you're seeking out a potential mentor or friend or business partner or any person in your life, is just who allows that space for you to really just be you.
And yeah.
I mean, it sounds maybe like a quote from a Pinterest board, but I'm honestly being serious.
No, I mean, and sometimes it can be very exhausting, right? Like mm-hmm. when, if you are with people that are constantly trying to one up each other, or with people that are sucking all the oxygen out of a room, and you don't feel like you've received anything, like there hasn't been anything reciprocated to you. And if you leave that room and you don't feel energized, then those are not the people for you,
yeah.
right? I think what I'm really grateful for is the people and my closest friends and people that are I'm constantly trying to add to this community are people that make me feel energized and make me feel like they've lifted me up as much as I try to lift them up. And mm-hmm. I think you have to just constantly check in with yourself and ask yourself that question.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thanks. How can people find you, Kalsoom, on the internet?
On the interwebs? I'm on Instagram and on Twitter at Kalsoom82. So people should message me there.
Thank you. This show, if you didn't know, is based on a bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate called The Tidbit, obviously. And in it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. 5 quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co to sign up. And we would love if more budding entrepreneurs and listeners like you could find out about The Tidbit. Our mission has always been sharing education and access to resources, and the best way to reach more folks like you is to leave a review in iTunes. So I would be really appreciative if you could head over to your app, leave a little tidbit on there as to what you learned here on the show. And until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.